Let's start in order with item 514-20, the Community Preservation Committee recommending the appropriation of $16,884 in CPA funds for repairs to the Durant Kenrick House. Ms. Kreitzer, are you can handle that tonight?
Yes, I'm here with Lisa Dady, is also here for this project.
Hello, welcome.
Oh, hi.
And if it's okay to share my screen, I have just a quick presentation.
Go right ahead.
Okay, so we have tonight the Durant Kenrick Homestead Gutter and Window Repair Project, which was recommended for CPC by the CPA for funding in November. The project overview, this is the east facade of the Durant Kenrick Homestead. The gutter, which is located this portion right here, this portion of the wood gutter has failed and has begun to damage the facade. Specifically, the six windows on this facade are now water damaged due both to the gutter and to an interior leak of the fire suppression system, which has now been fixed. So the Historic Newton is requesting funding from CPA funds, and they're pairing that with a grant from the 1772 Foundation to complete repairs, which would include completely replacing the gutter and removing these six sash windows and having them repaired off-site and returned. And here are some additional photos of the existing condition of the gutter and the windows. The quote is from Classic Construction, and Historic Newton believes it would take $9,461 to repair the gutter, and that's would be replaced with a fiberglass gutter, which has been approved by the Newton Historical Commission. They've reviewed the project, and they proposed the use of a different material, in part because it can carry much more water away from the building. It won't deteriorate, and they can do a really good job today of replicating the historic appearance. So from the ground, it won't be obvious that it's a different material. The remaining funds, $17,423, would be used to do the restoration of the windows. Here are the funding sources. The CPA grant is requesting $16,884 from the historic resource funding. That's matched with the $10,000 grant from 1772 Foundation, for a total project cost of $26,884. Thank you.
Thank you. That was really helpful. And appreciate the thoughtfulness. And I really felt like you put it all together very concisely for us. So thank you very much. Did you say that Ms. Dady was here as well? Did you want to add anything? And I see we have... looks like a couple other folks, perhaps, from Historic Newton. So please welcome, and if you wanted to add anything, this is a great time.
I'm just really grateful to the CPC for approving the funds. I think it's a great example of matching with a private foundation with CPA funding, and we're really excited about the project. The sash need it. Both the water damage from the fire suppression system and from the gutter has just really literally chipped away the painting and the caulking on the glazing on the sash. So we're just excited. We're ready to go. We have, you know, we can do this over the winter by boarding up the windows. So we're just looking forward to the possibility of having the funding move through this process. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us tonight. Members of the committee, I see two hands up. Councillor Kalis, followed by Councillor Norton.
Great. I'm already there. Okay. So, thank you. My only question is, I see that you've got three quotes. Can you just help me understand, did you choose the lowest or the best? Because I love this project. I think it's great, and I think it's great the way you're doing it. And I just wanted to know for my own edification, like, how you chose.
So the we were getting the three quotes kind of as we were going through the CPA process, and the first one to come back to us is Classic Construction, and we've worked with them before. They've worked on the Allen House and on Jackson Homestead, so we felt really comfortable pretty much having their documentation be what followed it through the application process. And while we were doing that, we really wanted to try to work with North Bennett Street School. I don't know how many of you are familiar with them, but we thought we could pair up and do some educational activities around the work. They are a school in Boston that teach furniture making, preservation, carpentry, that sort of thing. Took us a while to figure out that they wouldn't be available for this. And then we, at the very last minute, got a third quote, which did come in under Classic. And we were vetting, we vetted that other person, and we decided to go with them. But that's just been recent since the application process. So that information hasn't caught up. What we think might happen is that he came in under enough that we don't know, you know, I want to see how it kind of plays out to see if we can save CPA funding. If we can give some money back, that would be great, but we just can't predict that until all the way through the project.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Hey, thank you. Councillor Norton.
Thank you so much, and I will definitely be supporting this project. I think it's fabulous that we've been able to preserve this building, and I'm sorry that we haven't been able to use it recently for events. I was looking forward every now and then. I have to reserve event space for my day job, and I was excited to be using it. I'm just wondering what else you see coming down the pike that we should be prepared for. I mean, obviously, it's an old structure, and I'm sure there will be future needs, just if you have any sense of that.
You know, at Durant Kenrick, in terms of preservation projects, it's in really good shape. I mean, I definitely, there's going to be the usual sort of maintenance, you know, in systems in a few years, because I know some of them were put in around, what was it, 2013, 2012. And we have a long range plan for that sort of thing. But from preservation, it's doing really, really well. Jackson Hole has a different story, but Durant Kenrick is looking really good.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions or comments from the committee? Okay, I also just quickly wanted to mention, I think it's terrific and a great use of funds, and it happens to be right smack in the middle of my neighborhood, and I know that our Ward School students, obviously not this year, but regularly visit it and utilize it, and it's always wonderful to see that history come to life right yeah. in the middle of our neighborhood, our home community, and also just how readily it's been used for events. It's awesome how what a terrific asset it is in history, in space, in that living history, as I mentioned before. So I'm also very happy to support this. Do we have a motion on the table with respect to this? Anybody want to make a motion?
So moved. Approval.
Approval moved by Councillor Kalis. All those in favor, please raise your hand.
Oh.
Or your blue one, ideally. It's just easier for me to see.
Blue one.
Councillor Malachy, I'll take that as an aye.
When my nephew was young, his favorite blanket was actually called Blue One.
Oh, you know, there's something about little blue soft things for kids. My son had a little blue doggy and a little blue elephant blankie. All right, 6-0. Thank you very much, and thank you, Ms. Kreitzer and Ms. Dady, for joining
thank
us.
You.
Thank
right,
you.
Thank you all.
Good night.
Okay, next item. Item 515-20, Her Honor the Mayor, requesting the sum of $500,000 from free cash to fund the replacement of the city's storage area network and the replacement of the firewall. Mr. Mulvey, are you going to present on this one?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you.
I don't have a presentation, just a little bit of an overview. Thank you for the time this evening as we discuss replacing the storage area network, as well as our firewalls and edge networking equipment. I hesitate on sharing too many of the details for the sake of security, but certainly I'm willing to share enough not to jeopardize your approval of funding. Of course, I assume you do not want to hear most of the deep dive details anyway, but if you do, I am happy to have those discussions offline. Our social area network went online in 2013. It's literally in its eighth year. Some of that equipment has pretty much been running every day since that time. Our virtual servers that run on that storage area network support applications ranging from the new financial system, GIS, current permitting, all departmental data storage, most assessing data, all the city council data. After many interviews, discussions, demonstrations, and a bid, we went with an EMC solution in 2013, which we have been very satisfied with. We've added additional storage and memory and processing capacity over the years. Back in 2013, we replaced approximately 40 physical servers, most of which were approaching their own end of useful life. This replacement included a backup system and a redundant setup located on the other side of the city, connected by dedicated city-owned fiber. Our maintenance agreement with EMC has always been fantastic. When equipment began to degrade, EMC would overnight replacement equipment ahead of imminent failure. They essentially had a connection into our system, and they could see alerts and warnings and address those problems before they became potential work stoppers. Since we have doubled our virtual servers with very little lead time required, our disk space requirements have grown exponentially. We've procured additional shelves to enhance and accommodate. Moving, exporting, and restoring data is now a breeze. Much of our initial equipment, though, has reached end-of-standard support. This means we rely on third-party support companies who merely send us replacement parts after the existing components die. Third-party support does not always have the ability of an EMC in monitoring our systems. Third parties cannot update software revisions. Most of the software is not updated at all anymore. We all will feel a significantly higher comfort level depending on the actual manufacturer instead of a third party. So pretty much all of our equipment at this point is in various states of not being supported by the manufacturer. Nowadays, Dell owns EMC, but the EMC line of products continue to shine. We'd really like to go with them. The new proposal includes moving the SAN into an alternate secure city location, not at City Hall, and instead of mirroring across the city, using a cloud connection for out-of-the-city redundancy. This solution also includes the ability to migrate the existing system directly to the new system. Maybe I'll pause there for a minute. That's $425,000 for this storage area network. Before I talk about firewalls and load balances, do we want to talk about this part?
Sure. Why don't we take a pause and take some questions and then see what people want to know and take it from there. But thank you very much for that overview. And let's get started with Councillor Kalis.
Thanks, Mr. Mulvey. A quick question on this one. What is a typical lifespan of a storage area network?
I would say probably 5 to 7 years. It's the components are, it's a combination of different pieces, and everything is supposed to be replaceable and redundant so that you continue to update things and add on. The majority of our system was bought in 2013. We've definitely got our money's worth. We're not replacing this ahead of time.
Okay. And then, so that sounds great, actually. So it's just something we have to know every 5 to 8 years, whatever it is. When I buy a computer, I'm always looking at, or a technology, at the specs in a variety of different areas. And I'm sure you can't go into the specific specs, but with whatever those specs are you looking for the best of everything or middle tier or lower tier? Because I'd hope that you'd be looking at mid to best to better so it lasts, but I'm just wondering how you evaluate.
We really like EMC. I've always been leery of going with the best. I would say that EMC is the best and that anybody else is going to be a significant step below them. I can choose different levels of EMC solutions, and what we're looking at is not their top end of the line Fortune 500 solution. It's a logical good fit for the city that will last us for the next 7 to 10 years. Everything is scalable. we definitely learned our lesson in cutting corners. You know, 10 years ago, when we didn't have much of a budget, we invested a lot in duct tape. And nowadays, with the assistance of the administration and the council, we're really getting the opportunity to invest smartly, and it has showed.
Okay. I'm just going to ask one more question because I don't see any more. Is that okay?
Of course.
So the other thing that, and I'm really just basically, I'm not a tech person, but I'm going on my experience. When I always buy and look at the flexibility and the ability to add on. I assume that you're doing that, and some of the duct tape that you've experienced over the past 7 years is exactly that reason. So talk a little bit about, you know, how you're foreseeing the future and how you might want to add on and how the system fits.
Okay. So the theory behind the storage area network is we're buying a warehouse of options. We have memory. We have disk space. We have processors. And what we do is we basically can allocate what we need for each server, virtual server solution. So when we went with the new Munis for the general ledger, they gave us a list of required specs to run that server. And basically all we had to do was dial it up. We had the resources available. They said they wanted, you know, 180 gig of disk space. They wanted 10 core processors. They wanted 256 gig of memory. And you really, with the virtual, you just carve that out. You apply the appropriate network operating systems license and you're good to go. So it's really, it almost takes things back to a basic point and then allows you to build and enhance from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Couple questions that I have, Mr. Mulvey and Ms. Jakowski, if you could comment on these as well. To Councillor Kalis's point of how long things last and the recognition that in 7 to 10 years we'll need to do this again, I'm wondering what the budgeting process looks like on your end, you know, to keep track of these things. Will it go, does it get marked down on the CIP for a 7 to 10 year time horizon? What is the, you know, how do you think about that, and how are we handling that on the back end to make sure that we're keeping track of this type of thing, particularly because it is such a significant expenditure?
So we have had the SAN replacement on the CIP, but it's been a low priority for the past couple of years. But as time moves on, it starts to move its way up. And it started to accelerate, and this year we really had it at the top. I think it was in the top three. When we started to have some concerns with our firewalls, and we realized that we really should have just accelerated these a little bit more, probably should have prioritized it higher last year instead of shooting for, say, this July. But we are always cognizant of the age of the system, and you know, we had begun talking about this when at that point where they declare an end of life for the equipment, which is usually 3 or 4 years notice. It's not something you go into lightly, and this, especially when the equipment is still working just fine, it doesn't feel like a high priority, although we have been discussing it for a couple of years.
Appreciate that. And Ms. Jakowski, if you want to just weigh in quickly on your thoughts around that question. And then the other question that I have for you is if you could remind everybody about our free cash position, because I see this as a request from free cash, which I know is something we've, you know, tried to really guard very carefully, especially in these economic times. So I'd love your commentary on those two points.
Well, this is a proposal to utilize $500,000 from our recently certified free cash, well, 3 months ago, and we had a free cash certification of $7.4 million. So we have not allocated, as far as I can see, I can double-check that, but there hasn't been a lot allocated yet from free cash. The mayor and the CFO have chosen to utilize free cash for this request. In terms of the positioning of the project on the CIP, obviously the mayor and the CFO have, like Joe said, you know, bumped it up and up and up as its need has become more current, and now we're at the point where it's time to actually purchase. I don't have any problem with, information systems and, the real guts that Joe's talking about here for storage or whatever, in addition to personal computers or whatever they are for teachers and staff. We do depreciate those assets on part of our annual audit, just as we depreciate every single asset that we have. Even for a large project, we depreciate all of the costs associated. So this is pretty typical. There's nothing out of the ordinary about buying something like this. We'll put a depreciation in of 5 to 10 years. And that's all I really can add. But if I need to clarify something, let me know.
Like one question I have is there any other place in the budget that we could have thought about drawing this money from? And one of the things that's just striking me, and I think it's important that we maintain our equipment, our networks, replace what we need to replace. I'm certainly in support of this. I just really want to understand the process a little bit. I mean, I guess it troubles me a little to think that we can only get to something like this if free cash allows, as opposed to planning for it. And I understand that now we're talking about something that's 7 to 10 years out and 7 to 10 years before where we are today, even. Yeah. Things work differently. So,
You got me thinking a little bit. I would say the alternatives for funding something like this would be to borrow money for it. But it doesn't seem consistent with logic to borrow a general obligation bond for $500,000 worth of storage equipment. Putting it in the operating budget wouldn't have been advisable because it would have been a one-time cost. So it's not going to recur every year. So it would kind of skew the operating budget. And the fiscal 21 budget was crafted, as we all know, with having to cut at least $10 million right out of the gate due to the COVID crisis. So it's my opinion that free cash makes a lot of sense in this case. There aren't many other alternatives other than borrowing for it, putting it in the operating budget, charging it to a grant, which, we don't have available.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
Any other comments or questions from the committee? Okay, is there a motion on this item? Councillor Kalis.
Move approval.
Okay. Approval moved by Councillor Kalis. Any other comments or questions before we vote? No, it looks like people are starting to vote, I think. Or Councillor Malachy, is that a question?
That's a vote.
Oh, that's a vote. Okay. All those in favor, let's raise our hands. Okay. We've got 6-0 again. Okay. Mr. Mulvey, thank you very much. Mr. Kowski, thank you for your commentary on that.
Thank you very much.
Have a very happy holiday if we don't see you or virtually see you anyway.
Thank you. Likewise.
Between now and the break. Okay. Next item, number 487-20, which is Her Honor the Mayor requesting to transfer the weights and measures inspector position from the Health and Human Services Department to the Inspectional Services Department to more accurately reflect the nature of the position, to add one temporary full-time employee Let's see. And there's some detail in here about the city ordinance that covers the responsibilities of this position. So why don't we turn it over to Commissioner Lojack, who I see is with us. And hopefully everybody saw the letters on this that I thought were quite helpful.
I'll take it, Councillor Grossman.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So I just wanted to quickly comment on the last item. The comptroller really did a good job explaining why we're using free cash. Departments are also encouraged to put equipment that or facilities we know that are going to need work in the future to put them into the CIP. For example, we have artificial turf fields at Newton North and Newton South that we know we're going to need to replace in the future years. Actually, one of them needs to be replaced now, but so those are in the CIP. So we really encourage departments to put things like the storage area network, which was in the CIP for a number of years, in, and then it starts to move up as time goes on. So the process does work pretty well. All right, switching over to weights and measures. We feel that at this time, as Mitch Baker retires, really an incredible city asset, an amazing city employee for the last 20 years, the man about town, who is probably the most visible of city employees, and Councillor Malachy's neighbor, I know that, she's smiling, and always the man with the cleanest truck in town. She's still saying yes to that. But we feel this is the time to move the position to the more appropriate department. We feel that HHS really should focus on health, and this position is more of a facility inspection kind of position, more appropriate for ISD. Both commissioners are in full agreement with this move, so we really wanted to make this clean. We wanted to move the money for the second half of the year to ISD and to make sure that the ordinance is cleaned up so that it's moved from HHS over to ISD with the appropriate language. We're hoping we can convince Mitch to stick around. Councillor Malachy, maybe you can block the driveway or something. Make sure he sticks around to maybe break in a new person if we can get that person hired soon. And so that's what the temporary position is there for. But other than that, we really feel like this is the most appropriate place for this position, this very important single position, which to my knowledge has bounced around between departments over the last 20 years. But we think this is the right spot. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Yeo. And I really appreciate you joining us tonight. Just so the committee knows, Ms. Lemieux, I think wasn't feeling well this evening. So Mr. Yeo graciously offered to come and handle some of these items for us, and I appreciate that. One question for you. Can you just take a minute and explain what the day-to-day of this position is?
Yes. Well, the job description is on the website. There are literally thousands of pieces of equipment in this city that by state law, we, the city, are required to make sure are accurately measuring a variety of fluids. And, you know, the gas pumps is the one we normally see, but grocery stores, you know, the deli counter, all that stuff. We are by state law required as a municipality to inspect to make sure that the customer is getting a fair deal, but also that the businesses are getting a fair deal too. So measurements, if you go back to probably the Middle Ages, I'm sure there's probably been a weights and measures inspector going way back. So it's an important municipal function. I know that when I heard the story that when Wegmans opened their new store, Mitch asked people to guess how many weights and measures were actually in the store that had that he had to look at. And people guessed, you know, 15, 20, and the number was 88. There were 88 separate things that had to be measured. So we're a big city. Mitch got around town and got the job done with, he always kept up to date with pieces of technology that he used to measure all of these different devices. And so we're hoping we can find somebody to fill that important role. So check out the job description if you know anyone who's well, hopefully has some experience, but or is obsessed with technology. This would be a good one.
So you mean, I just want to make sure I fully understand, which I think I do. But so if you're taking the example of Wegmans and they opened a deli counter, the scale that they use to weigh those things, making sure that it's accurate.
Yeah, and cash registers as well. We're required. That is part of weights and measures. Cash registers at some point got thrown in with that. So any kind of the transaction between customer and business is something that as a municipality we're required to really look at. So that's what Mitch has done.
Interesting.
I know.
You learn something new every day in city work and government. Councillor Malachy, I see you have your hand raised.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, taxi meters are another one, right?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, big one. Or low shrinking. So I guess I'm kind of puzzled by the need to move it. First of all, I checked with David Olson how long it had been there. It hasn't really bounced around so much. It was last in ISD, I guess, from sometime before 2020, it went to Veterans Affairs, and it was 14 years there, and it's been Health and Human Services for 6 years.
Yeah.
And I was looking at, I was curious about other towns, and I looked at a bunch, and it's,
they're all over the place.
Yeah, so for example, so Newton, currently health. Waltham, it's currently health. Brookline, it's currently health. Malden, it's currently health.
I found several in DPW and
Needham's
inspectional services. Yeah.
Needham, maybe they've changed it because on a state list of sealers, it's listed as contracted to DOS, so maybe they've discontinued that. I think that's contracted to Division of Standards. But in quite a few places, it's actually its own department, like Framingham, Cambridge, Revere, Salem. I was kind of looking for, you know, comparable medium-sized cities. It's all its own department. And I guess, it seems to me like I would like ISD to focus like a laser beam on making sure things get built the way to match the plans and that we don't have walls, retaining walls that weren't supposed to be there springing up. And to me, it seems like I guess I don't see the point of moving it when it's such a self-contained job. I mean, I don't believe that there's any sort of substitute. I don't think, health inspectors are filling in for Mitch or vice versa any more than, you know, the plumbing inspector would fill in for Mitch or his, you know, the new Mitch or vice versa. So I guess I don't see what we're gaining by moving it at this time.
Yeah, I think we do feel that it should be part of a larger department. So it should have a supervisor, not be its own department. And therefore, which department is appropriate? Different towns do it different ways. Sometimes it's in DPW. Other times it's in a health or an inspectional services department. So we don't feel it is largely self-contained. This isn't going to take any Commissioner Lojek's time in any significant way or take his focus or their team's focus off of what they're doing. So we just feel that it's the most appropriate department.
Is there any thought to seeing who you hire and what that person thinks is the best place for it?
Generally, I think the city makes that determination ahead of time in terms of where the position is and who they report to. I don't think who we hire is going to determine where the position ends up.
So what are we actually gaining by having it as part of a larger department?
Well, gaining a supervisor, I only have so many people that I can supervise, and we feel that it should be part of a larger department, and ISD is the appropriate one. So it's not going to take once we get somebody established and get them doing their job, it's not going to take a lot of time to oversee.
And we've got a couple other hands up. So, Councillor Malachy, is it
okay? Thank you.
Okay, with you, if I go on, and if you want to ask any more, come back to. Okay, Councillor Noel, go ahead.
So much, Madam Chairwoman. We actually had heard this in Programs and Services, and it made a lot of sense. So, when we're ready, I'm happy to move it.
Thank you, Councillor Kalis.
I agree with Councillor Noel. I just think that you know, Councillor Malachy, I do agree with you on the focus for where ISD should be, but I think, you know, the administration feels like that this is the best place for it, and I just want the best functioning administration, so I think that they can make that determination, so, and I know, like, that Commissioner Lojek likes to build his fiefdom, so he's successfully doing that.
Councillor Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and a little bit echoing my colleagues from Ward 8 and Ward 6, I generally like to focus more on the outcomes and let the mayor and her administration, run her team, and it makes sense to me what you've presented in terms of the reasons. In fact, as I read the materials, I thought, I wonder why we hadn't done this before. So I'm very comfortable with this change. I did want to give a shout out to Mitch's mom, who is in Ward 2. And also that, Commissioner, I look forward to discussing with you my item, which I was going to be bringing up with Mitch, which is putting warning labels on gas tank labels, on gas tanks, just like Cambridge is doing. So that is going to be super fun, and can't wait to work with you on that.
Glad to discuss it.
Yeah. and Commissioner, thank you very much for joining us. I just wanted to ask if you wanted to add anything to the discussion. No pressure to, but I'm delighted to have you here tonight and would welcome that if you want.
I think most people don't understand that this position was originally in ISD, if you look historically in the city of Newton. But on the other hand, we have no issue with doing this work with Mitch's successor. The office is right down the stairs from where we are. And I just think it's just, as far as I'm concerned, it's another inspector. And, you know, he has a specialized area. We have a similar thing that does periodic inspections. So I don't think it's that strange that we would do it.
Okay, thank you. We don't have any other hands up. We do have a motion on the table from Councillor Noel. Any other comments or questions before we vote? Okay, Councillor Malachy, was that a question or a vote?
Unmuted. Not related to this item specifically, but while I was looking at the job description for this job, I noticed the vacant inspector position. I guess it's been listed for the last month or so. How are we doing on filling that position?
At this point, we have resumes, but it's very difficult in this market.
I'm gonna just want to ask that we
stay
on the
background.
Yeah, I just.
I apologize. I'm also at the zoning and planning committee meeting on another device.
Appreciate it, and I just want to make sure that we're also staying on this particular item. So if anybody has comments or questions on this particular item before we vote, let me know. And if not, we'll take a vote. I don't see any. So all those in favor, if you could raise your hand, please. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, 6. Okay, 6-0. Thanks very much. And Commissioner, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the presentation. Mr. Yeo, are you going to hang around?
Yeah, I can hang around.
Okay, thank you. So our next item, we usually take this next item in our chair's note together, 395-20, which is a request from the president of the council on behalf of the council regarding the budget expenditures and reimbursements related to school reopening, as well as an update on the expenditure of funds for COVID-19. So, colleagues, as you know, Ms. Lemieux is not here tonight. Mr. Yeo had mentioned that if we have questions to pass along that he's not in a position to answer, that he would be happy. He's got his pen ready to jot them down. I know I've received questions from members of the committee and others and wanted to give you the opportunity to ask them, or if there's anything else that's on your minds, this is a good time. So I see Councillor Norton's hand is up. Why don't you kick us off, Councillor Norton?
Yeah, so in general, was looking to see how much COVID, how much CARES Act funding was left related to testing. I saw the notice about the surveillance testing, but just wondering why we're not doing like what some of the universities have done. I've been talking to some epidemiologists in Newton, but why we're not pursuing the twice a week required asymptomatic testing or testing of everyone in the schools, the kids, the staff. I'm sure there would be a cost to it, which is also, of course, why I would want to know how much CARES Act funding is left. And then in general, I know there's been calls for creating a sort of expert task force or advisory group for the mayor and us. I would think of public health experts in the city and why we're not doing that. You know, I understand we've hired Dori Zalesnik to help work with us on COVID, if that's true. I don't know that she had any particular expertise on COVID. So, again, just who's providing us expertise and those other questions. Thanks.
Thank you. Just I will say that Dr. Zalesnik is an infectious disease specialist by chance. So that is her expertise.
Okay. Is she the only one that we're relying on?
No, we have a team of people that the commissioner relies on, including folks at Newton Wellesley Hospital. And she has a public health, commission as well. So she has people, she can call and get advice from, at any time.
And is that a sort of an official group or is it more informal?
Like it's more informal. She feels that that's the best way for her to get advice. And she has a lot of, she has a great team around her in terms of employees and is able to get the advice she needs. So, and bringing Dr. Zalesnik on was a big help.
Okay. No, that's helpful. I guess I'd still like to hear, like I said, sort of more about what the thinking was behind the once a month testing. My understanding is once a month and then also voluntary and why that rather than the way.
All right. I'm writing that down.
And Mr. Yeo, as you and I had talked about, the questions that I've both heard from other counselors and that I've also asked some of myself but would love to add to that question to pass along is if we could have more clarity on what the source of funds is for that testing program. Are we indeed counting on the CARES reimbursement there? Are we counting on the emergency funding that the council approved earlier this year for that? And Ms. Jakowski, I don't know if you know where we stand with respect to our CARES application and how much we've submitted for at this point and how much is left, to Councillor Norton's point. Are you able to comment on that?
I honestly don't know. I don't want to quote a figure because there may be some expenses that are not, haven't hit the books yet that Maureen would know about. So I wouldn't want to quote a figure. I would
rather we check in with her.
Okay, right. To Councillor Norton's point, my question around it had been, you know, if it's $1 million, but let's say we have $2 or $3 million of CARES capacity left, why not do the more, you know, complete testing? What are the budget back and forth ramifications, implications around that? So if you could just add that, please, Mr. Yeo, to the inquiry.
Yep.
Councillor Humphrey, I see your hand up.
Thank you. So I guess this was going to be more of a question for Maureen, so I guess just write it down and pass it along to her and she can get an answer back to us. But there seems to be a lot of rumors or reporting that the next congressional package relief bill or whatever might actually just not include state and local aid. And I'm just wondering what the impact is going to be for us if that were to happen. I mean, we don't know if that's going to happen, but I think it's definitely a possibility that they're just not going to include it. So I'd just like to get an answer at some point on what our sort of contingencies are for that. And then I guess I'll just mention for the other committee members that the CPC did vote last week to extend the rental assistance program through February, but the money will be gone after that. They're going to need to approve more money if they want to extend it further. It's my opinion that they should extend it further, because I think a lot of the people that are already getting that rental assistance are really going to need that help at least through the full rollout of the vaccine and possibly longer. And the folks at the planning department said they're going to ask the CPC and the city council for more money in January. So I guess keep an eye out for that coming down the pipeline. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So Ms. Flynn, just let me know that Mr. Hurley is present. Liam, is that you on the phone?
My apologies. I'm on the phone. I'm on school committee on the computer as well right now. So I apologize.
No, appreciate it. Thank you for being here. I know that you know, we've been trying to give you a little breathing room in between meetings that we've asked you to come to on this item. I really appreciate you coming, and I'm sure you understand the gist of the first couple questions. So would love your thinking or commentary on it if you're able to share.
I'm just logging in, Becky. I don't know if I saw the questions. I just logged in a minute ago. I apologize. And I may not be ready for them, but I'll try to do my best.
Well, let me do my best to pose them to you, and you can let me know. So Councillor Norton had asked about the testing program, and with respect to the decision to test once a month and on a voluntary basis as opposed to more frequently. And I think the reference point Councillor Norton referenced, which you can feel free to correct me, Councillor Norton, was other communities or university communities testing twice a week. The sort of tie-in financially that we were asking about was how much CARES capacity we have and whether the source of funding for the testing is expected CARES reimbursement or if it's the emergency money that the city council had allocated earlier this year, and if we do have more capacity, does that also imply that we have more ability to test with greater frequency and spend more money to be able to improve, jazz up, strengthen that program?
Sure, and thank you for that. I don't want to specifically, and I don't know if Ms. Lemieux is here to speak about the CARES Act. She's not
tonight, no. But Ms. Rio is very diligently writing down
notes.
Questions to pass them along.
I was taking notes and hoping that Liam arrived.
Okay, yeah. Hi, Jonathan. I just would say, folks, that the school department is covering this, and the intent is that this would be CARES Act eligible. I can't speak for the city in terms of what that funding total funding will be. I've been kind of tasked with, and my team has been tasked with getting this off the ground. We're going to be starting on Friday testing, just to kind of give some high-level perspective here. And we've broken this out into some waves. The wave one is really what we've identified as staff that are working with high-needs students that might regularly and consistently have difficulty with the four pillars, adhering to the four pillars. So certainly that's some student, you know, some students in special education, but there's also, since we're such an inclusive model, we do have general education staff that are in that. The goal in December, so we're going to be testing this Friday, then this coming Monday and Tuesday. The goal would be to get all of wave one, tested, prior to the break. Going forward, we're going to be then after the break, we're going to be adding wave two into the mix, which is really elementary and middle school staff that are in person, that are asymptomatic. And our hope, just to be open with you, we haven't communicated like this, is that we will actually continue to hopefully test wave one weekly if we can pull this off. There's a lot of unknowns. We have not done the testing yet. It's an all-new system with CIC and the Broad Institute. We have their software. We have the printers. We've set up room 111 at the Ed Center. It's beautifully set up. If anyone wants, I can send a picture. We've got an air purifier there and stations, and we've got a whole flow. There's even a direct exit out of the building. So part of our learning is basically figuring out what is our throughput. We're hoping to start with between 10 and 15 people in a 15-minute block. We're signing people up in Sign Up Genius. If we can get upwards of 25 people through in a 15-minute block, we're going to be doing 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. That's 3 hours. So if we can ramp up our throughput, we're hoping to get upwards of 250 to 300 people in through a day. That may not be possible. That's kind of a goal. We're going to start off a little bit slower than that, testing about 120 in a three-hour window and grow from there. So I would just answer you that our goal is to do this more frequently with particularly that wave one. I don't think I can make that claim right now yet with the wave two. Wave three is really going to be the high school staff. We're going to be certainly trying to test any of the high school staff testing them in later January before we start up in person, more in person at the high schools. So I hope that answers it. Just financially, again, the school department is covering it, and the hope, at least the conversations, and Jonathan, maybe you can confirm, is that this would be certainly CARES Act eligible, and that is certainly the hope.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Councillor Norton, I see your hand is up. So why don't we go to you, and then Councillor Kalis.
So Mike, I had a follow-up question, probably more for Jonathan, related to the mayor's announcement of more closings coming. So why don't I hold my question until after.
Sure. Did I do a good job capturing your initial
question? I still wasn't clear why this seems like a different approach than some of the others, and why it's not more comprehensive from the beginning, and then also why is it voluntary?
That's a good question. That's the way that our understanding of how this contract was written up with the CIC. I don't know if we can mandate this. I think some people don't want to be tested, Emily. So I don't know if we can mandate people to be tested or not. It's a good question. And again, it was supposed to be symptomatic staff. And I think just operationally for us, this is where we could handle Emily starting out. Start out testing. We sent out an email to approximately 2,000 staff, and right now it's approximately 1,100 that have gotten back to us on a Google form. We think that's going to continue to rise to grow in time. But this was the plan I set forth to me on how we're going to do this.
Okay, and I know you're not the health person. I guess I would have thought that we could require testing. I mean, this does obviously, the whole goal is to keep everyone who's working in the building safe. A related question then is, are we going to mandate vaccinations when those come? And is someone going to argue that
we're not touching that one right now.
Okay. All right. Just.
And it's also my understanding that we couldn't mandate it for teachers either. And just to clarify, the CARES Act funding only goes through December 30th at this time. Hopefully it would get extended, but at this time we can only get things reimbursed through December 30th.
But can we buy a whole mess of tests ahead of time? Like buy?
I asked that question. The answer was no. I wish we could. That wasn't allowed.
Okay.
By that wouldn't be allowed to be reimbursed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Kalis, you're next.
Is it a contract reason why we can't mandate it, vaccinations?
You know, I honestly don't, I don't have any.
I just wanted to follow up on what Emily asked, but, you know, because Mr. Yeo, you said pretty quickly that we can't mandate that, but.
I said it's my understanding. I'm not in the middle of this, but it's just my understanding we couldn't mandate that the teachers, the union, you know,
yeah,
they were going to absolutely require. Some don't want to be tested. Some don't need to be tested. But the in-school teachers, I think, as Liam has mentioned, the hope is to ramp it up and to be able to see how many they can get through their system, get it successfully off the ground. And then those in-school teachers, if they need to be tested on a more frequent basis, would be.
Yeah. So, okay, thank you. Mr. Hurley, you said that you're somewhat leading this charge. And I'm really kind of following up on what Councillor Norton brought up, because I just see wave two and wave three as a waste of money. And, you know, it's good to hear that wave one, that you're looking to do it on a weekly basis. I think that makes sense. I think there's reason to spend that money and to do that. But if you're doing it once a month for wave two and wave three, why do it? And why not just save that money and use it where we're going to need it elsewhere? I just want to know the thinking behind that, because that's what I've heard from so many people. And I'm not a doctor, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense from what I've heard. And then the way that you're phrasing that, you know, you just don't know how many you can get done in a week or however long it might take. I mean, other cities are doing this, other companies are doing this. So have we looked at how many they're getting done to just kind of give us some information? So I'm just trying to get some more data around what you're thinking and how the strategy has been built.
Yeah, it's a good question. This came about very quickly from my perspective to me. We've not had a long time. We went to take a look at the Watertown model to see what they do. It's a little bit of a different model. We saw they actually had a window to the outside that people were driving up, and it was a very quick process. We thought about that. We actually have an opportunity possibly at the Ed Center. We have a ground floor on Walnut Street to open up a window. They were getting – they don't have nearly the amount of staff we do, David, and I think that's maybe something that's different between what we're doing. My understanding, Wellesley is doing something where it might be like a take-home kit. So even that is a different model than what we have. This was what was presented to me. I don't have the reason or the kind of the background as to why. I think some of this was for all staff available, or all staff that were willing to take it in person. Particularly this, as we roll out, that we get a baseline test, David, to see if, see if people are sick. So I guess I would say, again, I can't argue with you on the science. I'm not the scientist here. I'm trying to implement this. This is what it was put out. But from my perspective, getting a baseline test on people, particularly like a baseline test on high school staff before they arrive, I think is a really valid thing. I think that's a great thing. And I don't, you know, if we can continue to test more frequently with bigger waves, we may end up doing that. That wasn't the communication that the superintendent put out there, but it might be something that we need to grow, and we may need to grow kind of our program either at the Ed Center or even look at alternates. I think this really is just the beginning, and, you know, you're having a school staff kind of operationalize this that has never done testing before. We looked at another model. It looked doable. It isn't really a medical model. It's self-administered. People do three swirls in each nostril and they put it back in and off they go. It's a very quick, literally 30 seconds. We have a software, LabPass software, and a little label that needs to come, you know, as people check in, assuming no, you know, technology glitches, we should be able to put people, like a conveyor belt. I mean, the idea is to really get people in and out of there as quickly as possible. So I don't want to speak for HHS and kind of the thinking.
Liam is the implementer.
I can pass on your question. I know that there is some value. My understanding is that there's some real value to teachers. If they're going to be in the school, that they have access to testing. And so this presents some real value, to those teachers who are in school.
No, I agree. I also agree this isn't the appropriate forum. This is finance. So I'd rather go back to programs and services and dig a little deeper where it's more mm-hmm. appropriate. But I just feel that the wave two and wave three in terms of the finances and spending that money, I just don't think you decide because it's your money actually right now. So, but it just doesn't seem right. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Counselor Noel.
So much, Madam Chairwoman. So I think it might be helpful for this committee and maybe when you report out to committees for us to better understand what is a union issue, what is a capacity issue, and what is a money issue. So, you know, just in terms of delineating those three buckets, because I think, you know, most of us have day jobs. I know in my day job now, we are requiring our employees to be tested every 2 weeks. We are paying for those tests at a cost of $120 a test. You know, we've been doing this since August, and all of this is hard. Like, none of this is easy for anyone, but everybody is figuring out a way to do it. And, you know, we recently had a phone call today with the state in my day job in that we are going to be in the first wave. So in the next 10 days, we are going to determine, the state is saying it's voluntary to get the vaccination, but we're going to determine whether or not we're going to require it for our employees. So I think that, you know, if we could just get some real straight talk about, like, what is a union issue and what is a capacity issue, I think that would be helpful, particularly because we have to go back to our constituents. And I think it's not a secret that that Newton has always portrayed ourselves as exceptional. You know, and I think people expect that level of excellence. So rightfully so or not rightfully so, they expect answers to these questions that other, you know, everybody is in, you know, this COVID crisis and everybody is figuring it out. So it's reasonable that our constituents and us want these concrete answers, want to understand what the thinking is.
I've written that down. I'm not sure if that question is, you know, from to me to try to answer or. No, Liam, I'm writing the questions down, and so we'll pass those on to.
I guess it's twofold. One is, you know, if you could just come to these meetings saying we can't because of the union, we can't because of capacity, we can't because of money, like just tell us what the can't is, and then the other piece is just understand that we all live, you know, we all live in two parallel worlds. And we sit on city council and we have jobs and we understand what's happening in the real world with COVID. So we temper what's being reported to us with what we're experiencing. And let me tell you, to turn around and ramp up my agency to test the entire staff every 2 weeks has been a nightmare and exhausting, but it's been incredibly effective and we're doing it. And it's been expensive. So, you know, people in Newton are not used to hearing, yeah, we just can't do that because we're exceptional people. We think we're exceptional. We tell people we're exceptional and we do it. So it's a twofold question of help us understand where the no is coming from and help us understand how and if it's possible to get to yes.
Mr. Hurley, Mr. Yeo, I will.
Yep.
I don't know if you want or are able to comment at all at this point.
I'm writing this down, and I'll get this to the commissioner and others to answer.
Mr. Hurley, do you want to add or comment?
You know, the only thing I would just say is I appreciate you know the multiple roles you weigh your situation. Don't look at this as what's the no. I think this is we're doing this, and I see it as a positive thing. Is it perfect? It probably is not. And I think that we are going to learn in this first week, even what we're doing here. And I think this could evolve, probably pretty quickly in time. So I look at it as a very positive thing. And so I think, you know, Jonathan, I think as you said, let's see. I think there's just questions that I can't answer I was not involved with.
I think just to echo Councillor Noel's point, and I saw some nods around the committee, I think that element that she's hitting on of us sort of wondering, you know, you read about and see other organizations, municipalities, et cetera, handling this stuff differently, that it seems like if we could wave a magic wand and test everybody every single day, that would be, you know, the sort of nth degree of attacking the testing issue, which I know we all understand is not possible, but figuring out where the lines have been drawn and why they were drawn there and what the barriers are to the wave the magic wand and get the right, you know, the perfect approach is what we're all struggling to understand and struggling to explain to our colleagues and others. And as Councillor Kayla said, since this is Finance Committee, the lens that I'm trying to ask about is, what is it, a financial piece and what are the financial constraints? But of course, it's impossible to divorce that question from the other two factors that Councillor Noel very clearly laid out. So I think we can, you know, put this back in your hands. And Mr. Yeo, appreciate you writing that down to pass it along to whether it's HHS or who you think should answer. But I think that, I think you did, Councillor Noel, really capture what a lot of us have been talking about and hearing outside of the confines of this committee. So thank you. Councillor Malachy?
Thank you. I just kind of following up on Councillor Kalis's question about the wave one, wave versus wave two and wave three. What's the budget for the testing, and how much is wave one going to cost, and how much would wave two, wave three, the 1,100 staff you mentioned that responded out of 2,000, are those just the people in wave one?
No, 1,100 was approximately the total that we've responded so far. Out of that, wave one is approximately 300 people that we've identified. Each test is approximately $47 per test. So,
pretty good price.
Yeah, I think that was a negotiated price that the city mm-hmm. worked on with CIC. So, you know, we pay for each test, regardless. So this is really, you know, if you can do the math on 300 times 47, that would be a weekly cost. If we were to do that, you know, every person every week. So that's going to be what it is. I mean, we don't have, you know, right now it's basically let's get this off the ground and running. And I would just say to the group, this has not been, the financial consideration has not been the driving factor. It's really a bit more operationally. Let's get this going and see what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you're kind of topped out at the number of people in the first wave that actually want to do it, and this is the number you'll be dealing with?
I think that number is going to grow a little bit. That would be my sense. So we put this out. Again, we've been working very hard to try and pull all these things together. I think the wave one, which, again, we've got – it's not a strict definition, but it is staff that are in contact consistently and regularly in contact with students that aren't adhering to the four pillars, which is, you know, face, hand washing, things like that. And so it's a multitude of different staff. Even putting that list together was quite a lot of work for the Student Services Department. I think that list will grow. And, you know, so I don't know the number it'll grow to, but we certainly want to capture that staff to make sure that they are being tested frequently.
So, the 300 in wave one, what percent acceptance rate have you gotten of the people you offered it to that would have been in wave one?
So we, well, again, the total that we put out there email-wise was around 2,000, and we have about 1,100 that responded in total. Mm-hmm. We had identified approximately 500 potential wave one folks that we thought might be eligible. So out of that, only 300 have gotten back and have signed up. So that's why we think that this will grow.
I guess I'm really surprised. I mean, do you have a sense of why anyone teaching in that position would not want to be tested? Because these are people that are coming to Newton anyway, physically, so it's not like they don't want to commute from wherever they live to just come in for a test. So they're here anyway in Newton. Is it to do with having to go inside another building? I was wondering, I mean, I've been to plenty of outdoor tests where they just even do it in your car. So why are the 200 or 500 not taking you up on what seems like a really good offer?
We didn't put that in the Google form. We looked for a sign up. So I think it's a good question. I think it's something that we'd like to obviously have that grow, but I don't have a great answer for you.
I know someone who teaches special ed in another town who pretty much positively sure she got it from teaching. So it just seems like, and so many people are desperate to get a test and either have to pay an exorbitant amount or, like I do because I'm cheap, wait 3 hours in a line or something like that. So booking a 50-minute time block, going in, getting it done, it just seems like a no-brainer to me. But
I agree. We've tried to make this pretty painless, I think, for our staff. So I don't have a reason why. If people have multiple different reasons, so I can't venture why.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Maliki. I don't see any other hands up at this time from the committee. Obviously, we've held this item through the fall. So any other comments or questions, or is there a motion?
So the only other thing I wanted to add was any more details, if we could have them on the more closings that or rollbacks that I just read about in the Globe a little earlier.
Sure. Well, the mayor's update just went out a few minutes ago with all of the details, went out half an hour ago.
Oh, okay. Well,
so, we've spent the entire day since 7:30 this morning working on this. So you'll be able to read the details. Some additional guidance will probably come out tomorrow as well, but you can see what we did. I would read what we did as opposed to reading news media. No offense intended, Councillor Maliki or to your colleagues.
Or John Hilliard, if you're watching.
Yeah. You just make sure you read it directly from us in terms of exactly what's going on in Newton.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Do we have a motion on this item? Motion to hold from Councillor Norton. All those in favor, if you could raise your blue hand. Okay, 1, 2, 3, you're missing one voter. Councillor Maliki?
You raised your hand in person.
You raised your hand. Okay, great. Thank you. So we've got 6-0 to hold this. And Mr. Yeo and Mr. Hurley, I really want to just say thank you to you both. I know you have been really working hard and long over this period, which has been long and hard and is ongoing. So I am particularly grateful for you taking time to join us and be with us on another late night to answer our questions. And we'll look forward, Mr. Yeo, to staying in touch, and you let us know what the best way is to follow up on the variety of questions that we asked tonight, but appreciate you passing them along.
Will do.
Thank you.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Happy Hanukkah to those celebrating. Also, committee, just before we adjourn, at this point, I don't see a need to have our December 28th meeting. I'm still not canceling it in case anything of an urgent nature comes up, but stay tuned. And in the event that I don't see you around,
I think we should meet just to see each other.
No. I feel sad inside when we don't get together.
Yeah. And we definitely, we need to invite, Mr. Yeo and Mr. Hurley to, you know, just not ask them any questions, but have fun.
O'Harris.
Yeah.
I'll invite you to come take a look at the testing site if anyone's interested, by the way.
Okay.
Good times.
Okay. Yeah.
Definitely take you up on that, I think. Well,
be in touch with the,
anyone with a dog, bring their dog.
Well, in case we don't have our meeting, I just want to prematurely wish you all very happy holidays, a happy new year, and an end to 2020.
Yeah. So, you're here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Take care.